Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California, sitting here at the house at 316 Gimmick Street. Believe it or not, folks, I'm about to go get my swell on over at the gym with Easton Corbin. That's right, country music superstar, one of my favorites. Easton Corbin is in town here in the city for a couple of days. I think he's just got one day off, but we're about to go out there and attack the gym. I'm going to work out with one arm. We'll see what kind of weights Easton's going to put up on the bar, see what his guys do, and I think we're going to bring it back over here to 316 Gimmick Street and hopefully record a podcast. I'm fixed to go down tomorrow and talk to David Walker of Firestone Walker Brewing Company. We're going to be talking about craft beer, and when you're talking about craft beer, I'm probably going to be drinking beer while I have this conversation. Firestone Walker with a new facility, a badass pub over here on the corner of Lincoln and Washington, talking to one half of the equation, David Walker, coming up real soon on the podcast. Easton Corbin, been in concert, been on the road. We're going to talk about where they're going, where they've been, how the new record's doing. I think he's got a new single that's about to drop, so we're going to do all that stuff coming up after we go get our swell on. Anyway, I've got a long podcast today. Well, it's not that long, but I'm breaking down WrestleMania 32 that happened in Dallas, Texas about 2 weeks ago. I'm breaking it down with my friend Court Bauer. So I'm going to go ahead and chew through the fat, get down to the brass tacks of the business, because I've got a lot of other things going on in my world. So let me get this business out of the way right now. So you guys know I've been talking about the 5-4 Club on this podcast for a few weeks, and that's because I hate to go shopping for clothes. And if you're like me, then 5-4 Club is your solution. Sign up for 5-4club.com and have your clothes delivered right to your front door. You can look good without stepping foot into the mall and without dropping your whole month's paycheck on new threads. You just pick your sizes. You personalize your style preference and color choice. Tell them if you're looking for clothes for the office, a lazy weekend, hanging home, or a night out on the town. You choose your style profile, classic, casual, forward, or mix, or like me, camo, and then you wait for the clothes to show up. Swig a beer for no shopping mall, and swig a beer because 5-4 Club won't break your bank. Where else can you get all that for just $60 a month? And I'll do you one better. If you go to 54club.com and use the promo code Austin at sign up, you'll get 50% off your first package. And if you want to change up your style choices or colors, you can do that for your next delivery. And the best part, 54 Club also gives you style tips to show you how to wear everything. They've made your wardrobe idiot-proof. So go to 54club.com and use the promo code Austin at sign up and get 50% off your first package. That's 54club.com and use the promo code Austin at sign up to get 50% off your first package.
Hey, MMA fan.
What?
PodcastOne.com's own Chael Sonnen has some great news for you.
What's up, guys? This is Chael Sonnen. Starting Friday, April 15th, I will have two podcasts a week on the docket. I got Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, and Podcast One's own good old JR. And for that, you're welcome.
Download your Welcome with Chael Sonnen now every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app or at PodcastOne.com. Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed.
All right, buddy, sitting here at 316 Gimmick Street, rolling sound. I got Court Bauer on the other end of the line. Court, good morning. How are you?
Hey, man, what's going on in sunny L.A.?
Sunny L.A. It's a wonderful day out here. I'm drinking a Red Bull. It's probably about 12 noon or 1 o'clock your time.
It is.
Hey, man, we're here to talk about WrestleMania 32, Dallas, Texas, from top to bottom. And we're going to try to do this in about 60 minutes because I got another podcast coming up. I've been totally jammed up trying to get caught up with everything that I've got going on. So people have been asking me, are you going to cover WrestleMania 32? And I am going to cover WrestleMania 32. I know everybody else has. You probably covered it on your show. What did you think about the event?
it was a moment where you take pause because you can break down the booking, you can Monday morning quarterback this thing to death, but the WWE audience is seemingly coming for a different experience. It's not what maybe it was 10 years ago. They're coming for the experience, like a Grateful Dead concert. It's a spectacle in a lot of ways, and their audience has changed. I mean, they did over $17 million box office for WrestleMania in Dallas. Think about that. You can say whatever you want about the finishes. You can say anything and everything you want about the road to WrestleMania, but they drew a big record-breaking attendance and gate for Dallas. So right there, you know, their audience is what it is today, and maybe it's changed from where it was 10, 15 years ago, but they like and love the experience of WrestleMania, and the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, I think they like and love the almost week-long festivities. Did you think when the crowd went home, they got the show that they were looking for?
Now, that's a great question. I don't know. I think a lot of people by the end, I mean, I had friends telling me that people were leaving during the main match, the main event, the title match. They were walking out. And we live in this time where you could walk out to beat that traffic, fire up your iPhone or your Android, and watch on the network as you're leaving to beat traffic the main event. You could stream it to your phone so you don't miss a minute. That's the world we live in, Steve. And so I don't know if that's a bad thing. I don't know if that's an indictment about the match maybe going a little long, but that's the world we live in. It's a weird show because 24 hours later, 2 weeks later, what's the fallout? What resonated? What worked? And that's, to me, is the big question, because you look at the match with Undertaker and Shane McMahon, the big stakes there. Undertaker's last match, if he loses at WrestleMania, Shane McMahon, the WWE Raw show on the line. And 2 weeks later, Undertaker's nowhere to be seen. A lot of speculation that he might be done. He's doing two shows coming up next week or this week in London. And maybe that's it. They're not sure. There's a question mark there. Whereas Shane, he's been running Raw the last two or so weeks. So, you know, what a world we live in.
Now, why did they give Shane control of Raw then?
Well, he had the whole deal with Vince where he said, you know, you lost, but heh, I'm interested to see what you'd do with the show if you were in control. And then he gave one show, and that led to two shows because of, I guess, social media was so into Shane's management skills at Monday Night Raw that they gave him a second show. But it's just like, what was the point of the stakes of Undertaker versus Shane? Shane lost the match. He leaped off that cage. He tried everything for 25 minutes. They went at it. And at the end, he lost. And they didn't honor that stipulation. So what was the point of him?
Well, that being said, I think that speaks a lot to, does that damage the credibility? I mean, it's funny because you could watch, you know, past seasons of Tough Enough, and we were never able to find, you know, the top WWE superstar, but many times people would lose Tough Enough, but, you know, make a good enough showing that they would offer them a contract, and you end up seeing some of these guys still on, you know, with the company today. Some of those guys have gone on to Lucha Underground. But so, you know, I think it is just in a war of attrition with so many injuries still in the roster, still waiting for Cena, Orton, Cesaro, I think he's come back, hadn't he?
Yep, Cesaro's back. They brought in a lot of guys right after WrestleMania. The 2 weeks after WrestleMania, they brought in a glut of guys, Gallows and Anderson. They brought in UHA Nation, now known as Apollo. They brought in a ton of talent. They brought back a ton of talent, all within a two-week period. It's a lot to digest.
We're right in the middle of an award-winning podcast. We're just trying to make heads or tails of how Shane McMahon got control of Monday Night Raw after losing the match at Undertaker, WrestleMania 32. We're bringing it back to point. You just brought up a boatload of new talent, new guys. Hell, I was just on WWE.com, and I just saw that they brought in a new batch of guys and gals down there to the NXT facility. Did you see that little posting?
Yes, they did. They brought in two great guys that have been
real
doing great
chippers.
Work. Yep, two guys from Japan. They're via Australia, but they worked for Pro Wrestling Noah. They're really going to be, I think, real good acts. Haston Nichols, they brought in Nikki Storm. They have this amateur wrestler, a real badass, Nikolai Bozhevik, who, you know, look at his amateur credentials, the real deal. And they're joining over 69 aspiring WWE talents in Orlando. 69. So there's going to be some guys that make it and some guys that don't. But I would love to see, I mean, these guys are physically impressive beasts and women. But I'd love to see us go back to the days where you bring in, I'm not saying there has to be a glut of them, but maybe a King Kong Bundy or two, a one-man gang, an Abdul the Butcher. I'm not saying these guys should be morbidly overweight, but just that, like, that diversity would be such a cool thing to have, because those guys are special, and we don't see that on the WWE roster or NXT. They make those guys – they make the small guys seem more impressive and that can go and run around them, and the big guys seem more impressive. They're jacked up. It's just variety.
Well, just as far as looking at them on the page, there on the internet, they all look like, you know, the guys, good-looking guys, some of them military background, like you said, the one dude, well, a couple of guys with some amateur, deep amateur backgrounds. The women were pretty, one a very accomplished CrossFitter, one of the young ladies been in the business for quite some time. So when you just look at their background, seemingly, hey, man, they could be good, great candidates and a good fit for WWE. But here's the thing, you know, when you come in with that deep amateur background and you have those competitive instincts, I've worked with a handful of guys that were such shooters, it was hard to work with them because they couldn't lose the mentality. That being said, when you look at the Brock Lesnar's, when you look at, you know, Kurt Angle, the best of all time that I've seen. Well, you know, Flair actually had an amateur background, but he adapted right to the pro style right off the bat. And, you know, even Ken Shamrock with his MMA background, he actually trained pro before he went to MMA, but, you know, took on a total work, you know, attitude, and he wasn't dangerous to work with, and he was very giving in the ring when he could have been a crowbar, could have been stiff, could have been hard to work with. So hopefully, you know, these young cats will be able to get that out of their mind, use the base knowledge, the shoot holes, that work style that they, you know, that they do know, but incorporate that into their program as they learn that. At the end of the day, they're all teaching the guys down there and the girls down there the basics of the business. You take the basics of the business after you learn the mechanics, employ psychology 101, take it to the next level, and, you know, you get your shot and you try to make the most of it. So hopefully, you know, these guys with these deep amateur backgrounds can forget that or leave it behind, but just don't get trapped in it.
Absolutely. And I think you look at Gable, you look at Jordan and how they've meshed and how they've utilized the amateur background in an incredible way, have infused it in the style of their ring work. And it really works. It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel jammed. It works. And another one I want to shout out is Natty Neidhart. She had a great match last Monday night on Raw with Charlotte, where she brought in the scientific wrestling that Josh Barnett teaches, a little jujitsu on that. Mat wrestling really was exciting. It wasn't like snooze or material. It was really fun to watch. So being able to incorporate that in a logical way, that new age style, would be great.
You know, you brought up two names a while ago. I was talking to Enzo Amore and Big Cass, and they brought up the two guys that you just had mentioned, Gable and
Jordan.
Gable and Jordan. And so these guys, I you know, did some research on them, looked at their backgrounds. I haven't watched NXT enough to catch these guys in action. So you think these guys got a big future in the business?
I think these guys...
Do they have it? Everybody wants to say, does this one person have the it factor, which is hard to put your finger on. Do they have it?
Individually, in the WWE system, I don't think they would have the longevity that they will have as a unit. To me, as a unit, they're like an A-. They're like a new age Steiner Brothers. They have like that amateur vibe to them. They even wear the like 90s throwback singlets with outrageous coloring and stuff. There's a little Kurt Angle in Jordan, and Gable's very special, but he's a smaller guy. So I think he really thrives in this kind of environment, and they can be a franchise tag team, a viable, credible franchise tag team for the next several years because they're young and they're so fresh. And they can mix it up with a very vibrant tag team division right now. They have a lot of tag teams. They are loaded. They haven't been this loaded in decades when you look at the tag team roster and the main roster.
Oh, dude, and that's what I've been talking about for, you know, I don't know how long. I said, you know, how about just creating some tag teams and leaving them together for a long-ass time? So, I mean, you know, these two guys, I look at Big Cass and Enzo. You know, if you leave these guys together for, you know, maybe their entire career, just think. Because to me, I love watching tag team wrestling. But when it's true teams, when there's teamwork involved, just throwing a couple singles guys out there, calling them a team, it ain't the same old thing. So to your point, there's some of these guys who, if you want to say, quote unquote, you know, aren't big enough to be the number one guy. And I believe almost any size guy, to a point, can be the number one guy. But it is, you have to be very, very special. Leave them in a tag team situation because that's what they're thriving in. That's what they're good at. And the sum of the parts is greater than the, you know what I'm trying to say. What is that saying?
Oh man, I can't. I'm brutal at sayings. You're
but you know what I'm saying. You know, the sum of the parts is greater than what they are individually.
Yes. Okay.
So that being said, just leave them as a damn team. So anyway, with that being said, skirting around the bush, let's go back to WrestleMania 32.
Okay.
And it started off with a ladder match, and there was Zack Ryder, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, Stardust, The Miz, and Sin Cara involved in this match. Now, what a way to jumpstart the show. And I love this match because it was spectacular. All these guys out there, I mentioned each of their names. I give them a hell of a lot of credit for putting their bodies on the line and putting on the show that they did. All the guys did some incredible maneuvers, incredible timing, incredible bumps. These are matches that are very, very hard, first of all, to orchestrate, let alone, have without a clusterfuck happening, someone getting seriously injured. So, man, I give all the guys a big round of applause for the effort. And it was a badass match. But, man, when you start off a show like this, and it grabbed the audience right from the get-go, Court, but goddamn, where do you go from there? Kudos to the guys for having a match, because that's what they were booked to do, and the fact that they all ended up safely. And let's go to the finish before you jump in. There it was after everything, and I loved a couple of the Sami Zayn things when he jumped through the ladder and did the gimmick on the guys, and then he jumped back through the turnbuckle. We've seen him do this before, hit Kevin Owens with that DDT, and then who was it? Sin Cara did the thing as he fell off the ladder, jumped off the top rope, and landed on a bunch of guys. I mean, there was so much more than that, but going back to this, you know, Court, when you start off like this, where do you go?
Well, I mean, look at it like this. They actually started the show way earlier with Kalisto versus Ryback. The show was over 6 hours long. So we're ready. When you're talking about that match, that's the fourth match on the show in Dallas. Fourth out of 12 matches. So, I mean, think about the fatigue factor. And you're right. You know, that match, where do you go from there? It definitely kicks it off with a lot of high energy. And then you have to bring them back up. And I think the next match with Jericho and AJ, you're going to hopefully sustain that momentum. I look at where the IC title was by design for last year. They've wanted to revive it. So last year at WrestleMania 31, they gave it to Daniel. They gave a title to Daniel Bryan, and they wanted the IC title, these secondary titles, to have credibility, the workhorse title. And I think they accomplished that in the last year. You had guys like Kevin Owens wrestling for it and defending it, and it really worked. And this year they go and they take Zack Ryder, who, great talent, great guy, a do-it-yourself guy that's really hustled to make a name for himself in a very competitive roster. And they bring him out. They didn't really revive him this one night. He wins the title out of nowhere. They didn't really do anything to his character to get him back on that road to the title. They didn't climb a ladder. He literally just climbed the ladder at WrestleMania. That was it. And so it was a disconnect for me, because I think there was some real opportunity with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn fighting it out for the title. Instead, it seems like they took a step backwards with the credibility of the title. The guy that hasn't really been in the mix has been taking a lot of losses. They give it to him without reviving him. And it didn't really make me excited for the title. It was a good moment for Zack Ryder and having his father in there. But business being business, I would have kept it on Owens or put it on Sami Zayn right there.
I agree with you talking about the business aspect of that, just because of what I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you know, mean to the future of that company. Dolph Ziggler can work his ass off, as can, you know, Stardust, you know, all those guys. But the way it almost happened, with The Miz going up in there, and due to his character being what it is, kind of sat there and basked in his glory just a con hair too long, here comes Zack Ryder, pushes him off, and he grabs the belt. So I was happy for Zack Ryder on a personal level, because as I watched his interview later on in the pay-per-view with Maria Menounos, it was such a forced promo, and it was, you know, working for memorization, and it just felt just so contrived. And I was like, because I used to watch the Long Island Z story that he used to do on YouTube, and god dang, this kid is very creative. He can talk. But it was a scripted promo, and it felt out of place, because when you go back to what he was doing on YouTube, you know, the kid's a pretty good talker when he's just being himself. But that's WWE spinning him up, writing all this shit for him, and then I just didn't like the promo. Love the moment for Zack Ryder. I'm a Zack Ryder fan. Here's a guy who got himself over on YouTube, and then, you know, there's a spot on the card for this guy. Just throw a little gas on him here and there and let him do his thing.
Yeah, I just think it's you got to set a guy right And you have to, if you're going to repackage them, reboot them, you got to do it the right way. And this was a hot potato tile switch. You went from Owens to Ryder to Miz. Man, why not just go to Miz at WrestleMania? If that's the direction you're going, you have Maurice coming out the following night, and you go in that direction. The hot potato thing was weird to me, and I still feel Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn brings a lot of credibility to the belt, and I think they could really whip everyone into a frenzy and get people popping when they say this is an Intercontinental title match, and you know these two guys are throwing down for the belt. I think it's a huge thing. Where they go with the Miz moving forward with the belt, I don't know, man. Zack Ryder deserves, I think, still to have in earnest a good run, and he's been chop blocked creatively at every seeming pass that he's trying to make something go. But this guy has really tried to do all he can to get himself over, and he's done a great job. He does this thing down in NXT as part of the Hype Bros with Mojo Rawley, right. And up on the main roster, he's doing this. So I mean, he's trying. He's not a guy just taking a paycheck and not trying to make moves. He's trying to reinvent himself. He added the beard. He's trying different things. He's just not sitting there just hoping fate goes his way.
No. Kid's working his ass off, and I give him props for doing all the stuff he did on YouTube back in the day. The promo felt forced. It was a feel-good moment for him. I'm a Zack Ryder fan, so, and again, swig of beer to all the guys in this match. It was a hellacious match, but, you know, like you said, it was the fourth match on the card, first match on the pay-per-view, and then we move into Chris Jericho and AJ Styles. Mm. And this match had its moments. At times, it seems it dragged yes. a little bit, and there was a little bit of discombobulation with some of the spots, and I think I have tremendous respect for Chris Jericho and AJ Styles, but I just feel like there's a little miscommunication in the ring, and you know, I didn't know where the crowd was. I mean, you know, how many times has Chris Jericho and AJ worked prior to this pay-per-view, Court? You watch Raw way more than I do.
They've worked a bunch, and sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't when it comes to chemistry, and I've seen that. We've both seen that. The real puzzling thing for me on this should have been the moment. You know where you're going for Payback in Chicago for May 1st, I believe, and AJ Styles is going to be the first challenge for Roman Reigns. And what better way to set him up than a big win at WrestleMania? The win that matters. Now, you can trade wins afterwards, but they don't matter like WrestleMania. WrestleMania should be holding up. You can remember who won at WrestleMania 7 or 10. The night after, not so much. And to me, this was a big moment to set your path for Roman Reigns. And now, unless they're going to have AJ win the title at Payback, which I highly doubt, and then you go to Jericho versus AJ, and Jericho can say, hey, I beat you at WrestleMania, which is the old territory deal. You'd have the next champion come and get beat by the local guy. So when he won the belt, you come back and say, well, shit, our local guy won the belt or won against this guy, so he should win the belt this time out. Well, I don't know if they're going to do that. I don't see AJ beating Roman Reigns a month into his title reign. I think they're going to stay with Roman Reigns for a while as champion. So it makes it all the more puzzling that AJ wouldn't get that win. And by design, Chris Jericho comes in for a few months, gets the talent over, helps you know get everyone moving up a little bit, get maybe perceived as a higher level than when they originally brought them in, and he's getting guys over. That's kind of what they're utilizing for. It's a good return on the investment. They didn't do that here at WrestleMania, and I'm baffled by it.
I was baffled by the finish. I thought AJ Styles should have went over clean. I think it should have went
clean
over
clean.
Clean as a whistle. And I love the way Chris Jericho builds his matches. He's always had, he's a thinking man's mind in the ring, the way he builds his matches, whether it's walls, whether it's this false finish or that, these different high spots or hope spots, you know, given to either guy. And, you know, he's going to go down the Hall of Fame. AJ Styles, if you're going to make this kid, now's the time to make him. Because I just thought that coming in from the outside, he's been all over the place. Coming in from Japan, TNA, whatever it's called. He doesn't get the win. Really? I thought AJ Styles, and it was a hard-fought match. And both guys worked their ass off. I'd seen it before. There was certainly some great moments in there, but a little discombobulation. But I looked for AJ Styles to get the stamp and get the W at WrestleMania 32.
Yeah, and he needed that stamp of approval. And Jericho losing clean in the middle of the ring to a submission would have been a strong finish. If it's to the Styles clash, that's great too. But AJ deserved that moment. And every measurement you look at, he's performed very well when it comes to in-ring. The rings don't die when he's out there wrestling. When he came on the scene and they put his merch on sale at WWEshop.com, like Samoa Joe, like a few guys that have come through, it went through the roof. They saw a huge demand, a huge surge. It sold out. And that's how we measure success and how we should move these guys around on the board. And also, AJ is a fresh face, a very credible opponent for anyone. He can make anyone look good. Putting him in the mix when they are desperately in need of fresh talent on top that can work on top, that can go on top, that are in their prime like AJ, why wouldn't you do that? That's why you bring a Chris Jericho in for these 3-4 month spells to get a return on the investment, to get someone over. And I'm saying Jericho has to lose every match.
No.
This is the one where it should have happened. This is the one where it does. I don't care about any of the other matches in February, January, on Raw, on a pay-per-view, but this is where that one should have been cashed in. And for whatever reason, it wasn't.
But then again, and here's the thing, because you give Chris Jericho the stick the next night on Monday Night Raw, and there's nobody better at sour grapes or making excuses or complaining and pissing, moaning, bitching, making excuses, or just being flat out pissed about that loss. So he gets to, you know, be vocal, have a promo to pick himself up, and it wouldn't have done him damage anyway. Done him any damage to do the job clean anyway. I think that's the way the finish should have went down. And then give Chris Jericho some mic time to bring himself back up. And like you said, they bring him in for these type of things anyway, and then it didn't go down like that. So I felt for AJ Styles, because now what do you do with AJ Styles?
Great question. What do you do? They're setting him up for Roman Reigns for the next event, Payback in Chicago.
Okay, now, okay. If that's the case for Payback in Chicago, if he can't beat Chris Jericho, how in the hell does he stand a chance to be the world champion?
Well, that's a great question. And another question is, you're putting him in an environment in Chicago. He's chasing his first WWE title, a super smart crowd, as always in Chicago, a hot crowd, like always in Chicago. Who are they going to be booing and who are they going to be cheering? The guy chasing the belt that's been their guy, that's a very smart, fan-oriented talent in AJ. And or they're going to be rooting for the new champion, Roman Reigns. I think they're going to be going for AJ 100% in Chicago as the babyface. And it's a weird first opponent for Roman Reigns, unless they're doing organic heel turn. And right now, maybe he's a tweener. I don't know. That's a big question. And we'll find out, I guess, in how they book that finish.
You know, then when you look mechanically in the ring, who's leading that match? Because clearly, Chris Jericho was leading this match with AJ Styles. That being said, AJ Styles can work with anybody. Mm-hmm. That being said, Triple H led the match with Roman Reigns. Of course, because he's a senior guy, and you know, Roman's not a leader in that ring yet. He's still got a long ways to go. So, right. You know, now you've got the guy who's taken a loss, who I don't know, because of this loss, that he still has full confidence, or he's at the top of his mindset within, you know, where he's at in the game of professional wrestling. You know, and now going out there with the task at hand, you know, The size matchup is a big difference. So AJ Styles needs to be hitting on all cylinders to go out there and have, just a ball buster of a match with Roman Reigns, because this kid's still trying to prove himself. Roman Reigns is the chosen guy. So AJ Styles really has to bring this match to Roman to make Roman look like $1 million. And he's the champion. So, yeah. Boy, I tell you what, AJ Styles just got a big anvil placed on his back. I mean, you always want to work with a champ, but I just don't know mentally, you know, where he's at and what the crowd thinks about him based upon the booking that's happened thus far. And again, taking the loss at 32 to Chris Jericho.
Well, man, I look at that match, and he's fighting from underneath as a baby in Chicago, which is going to be very receptive to an AJ Styles. Roman Reigns, I mean, I just don't know how you work this as a baby versus baby match. It's just it's going to be very hard for Roman Reigns. I don't see that mechanically. I see AJ as the babyface, and he's working the match as a babyface. I just there's an identity crisis with Roman Reigns now. Are they subtly going towards that heel run? He had a great line that he repeated a few times in the last few weeks on Raw. He's the man. He's not your guy. He's not a bad guy. He's not a good guy. He's the guy. And maybe I'm butchering it, but that's basically what he's saying. And it's an interesting line, because it's not exactly making you say, yeah, Roman. It's kind of a tweener line to me. It's an indication of what's to come. And then we had last Monday, we see Bray Wyatt, who might be transitioning to a baby face. And that would change the whole complexion for the plans moving forward, because I think he could be a viable baby face in that mix, along with AJ Styles against Roman Reigns. Two great opponents, as if he's a heel guy, as your champion to work with. Fresh meat, too.
Well, let's go to Bray Wyatt here in just a little bit, because I echo your sentiments of him being a babyface. And one last thing, looking into the future of the AJ Styles versus Roman Reigns match, you know, I look at that as almost being a stop-and-go type match, you know, with instead of just a constant flow of activity and action, you know, feeling each other out. Maybe Styles taking some powders because he's, you know, facing a bigger guy. Certainly Roman's not going to be taking the powders. And it's a babyface match, but AJ's going to have to be thinking about this. And we'll get into this as I make my point in the Roman Reigns versus Triple H match. We'll come back to this AJ versus Roman match. Okay, let's go to the League of Nations. It was Sheamus, Alberto Del Rio, and Rusev. King Barrett was there as well. They defeated the New Day, Big E, Kofi Kingston, and Xavier Woods. And of course, you know, after that match, myself, Shawn Michaels, and Mankind would come out and do a little business with these guys. I thought this was just a short, quick, entertaining match. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they did on Monday Night Raw, but I just look at New Day. Those guys are so energetic. They're so entertaining. They're so good as a trio on a stick. I see a big babyface run coming for the New Day.
And I'm curious to see what goes down with Big E, because I think he has main event potential, and you don't have to split them up to do that. You know, you could have two guys in the tag team action defending the belts, and then he could splinter off and go and do that, and they can mix and match all that. But yeah, again, weird finish. League of Nations with seems to be, I understand, maybe splitting up at some point soon. So they win against the New Day, which is bizarre to me. Again, another you know, question mark there. We're 3 minute matches into the formal WrestleMania card, not including the undercard, and there's another hiccup for me creatively on that finish. Weird, you know. And then they go into the other deal, and just looking at that other deal they did with Sean, with Mick and you, I'm like, man, I'm not saying this because you're my friend, but it's the honest truth. You needed your own separate moment. And to me, there was a way to do that. And I thought that they – in Dallas, that would have been a huge moment. You got a huge pop, but I think they could have utilized you in a better way.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to argue that point, but it was what it was. You know, I made an appearance at 32. Everybody expected to see me there. You know, Dallas is where I started, and so I ended up going out there. And it was a pleasure to be out there with Sean and Mick. The hardest thing for me – you know, I went into that event with a torn rotator cuff. I tore it pretty good, trying to train too heavy, and I figured I'd be able to work around it. What I didn't factor in was the fact that I was going to need a few working punches to get into a position to throw the stunners that they wanted to, me to throw. So that on that first right hand to Rusev, you know, I hit him right in the mouth, right in the nose, and just busted him open, got him in the corner, and that first punch blew everything out. And so it was just, you know, getting through the rest of it, catching the beers, holding those beers up when you're in the moment with the adrenaline and all that going, it's easy to do. All of a sudden backstage, you know, you can't even drink a beer. So, you know, I went into that with a little bit of a handicap. So the thing about it is it was what it was. Going back to that match, I you know, those guys, I really think that the Sheamus, Alberto, you know, I think real Alberto has come into his own since he came back from Lucha Underground, just because he's not laughing so much. He's not smiling so much. He's a little bit more vicious. Of course, I love Rusev. He's been one of my favorites. They've got to book this guy right. Is Wade Barrett sticking around, or is he leaving? Because I've heard he's leaving. What's the story with him?
Yeah, I heard he's leaving, and I've heard all types of stuff. Is he going into acting? Is he going to check out what's going on in Japan? Is he going to have a hero's homecoming in Great Britain, which is an exploding region for wrestling right now? A huge appetite for pro wrestling, especially WWE wrestling. Who knows, but he's on his way out. And to me, I can tell you, Alberto has huge babyface potential. Huge. Night one, when he came in L.A. for his return, his surprise return against John Cena at Hell in a Cell in October, got a huge reaction, babyface reaction against John Cena. The crowd going, see. Man, and they were saying that the whole time going into the winter, even with Dutch at his side and that convoluted Mexi-American thing or Mexa-America, whatever the hell it was called. It was like they were handcuffing him. And Dutch is an amazing guy, but it's just a weird marriage between the two. And he came out to Wally Mania for us in Dallas. He got he blew the roof off the place. Huge pop from the fans, and they all chanted CCC. He's got main event babyface appeal, and he doesn't have to pander. He's just a no-nonsense, credible guy that can kick ass, and he's over. And they're just not – there's a disconnect. It's not happening for some reason in how they're utilizing him. But he could have a huge run. You want to hit – you want to tap into that Mexican fan base. They want a tour down there. And for some reason, they're just not programming that way. And he could be a huge babyface for him. And
Roman Reigns – absolutely. Good-looking guy.
And if Roman Reigns is your heel champion, a babyface Alberto chasing it, could be fun.
That, yeah, it could be fun. I mean, it takes me back some old world-class days. I mean, to a degree, he reminds me a little bit of Gino. I mean, so many years have passed by. It's kind of a different era. But just that good-looking Latino guy, he has all the ability in the world, comes from a shoot background, picked up the pro style, you know, second, third-generation guy. But, yep. Yeah, it could be a huge star. But so, as well, Sheamus, a real quick backstage story. Sheamus is back here drinking Broken Skull IPAs with me. He pounded down about 3 tall boys in 15 minutes. And I still think there's room for those guys to go with Sheamus. He's got a great personality, but I think they manufacture him a little too much on television. But all the guys in this match have a lot of potential to make the next step and be the big star. And I love Rusev, so don't even get me started about him. This kid, they need to book him as a brute. That certainly, you know, when The Rock came in a few months ago and said that, you know, how flexible Lana was, and Rusev had to, he was given the silent, non-speaking part. That didn't do anything to help the guy. You built him up as a crusher. And now he's got to sit there and take that. So,
what if back in the day that had happened to Nikita Koloff or in MMA to Fedor Emelianenko? I mean, it's just like that's the problem. That's how you're supposed to be presenting this guy, but you're not, and you're doing that, and it totally neuters him. It takes all. It defangs a top heel. And I look at where he was a year ago in San Jose, coming out with that badass entrance with the tank, to where he is 12 months later, and it's disheartening. It's disheartening.
Well. It is disappointing. Hey, man, let's take a break right now. Pause for the calls for the sponsors to keep this show on the air twice a week, delivering audio whoop-ass for you wrestling fans out there around the world. I'm talking to Court Bauer. Court, before we go into the break, plug your stuff, your show, and get your information in there.
Yeah, check us out at mlwradio.com. We have Jim Cornette, Conan, myself, ex-WWE writers. We have historians talking about the Dallas territory. We're going to have a show with Bruiser Brody coming out this week. And it's just a lot of fun. We have a VIP subscription for just $1.99. Go to mlwradio.com. And actually, we're going to have a new show coming out every week with Tama Tonga and all the New Japan crew. And that's going to drop probably on the weekends. And you can learn more about that at mlwradio.com.
Let me say thanks for supporting all the great sponsors of this podcast, and that includes Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. If you're looking to change your life and get on that path to healthier living, then get yourself on the DDP Yoga program. And right now, Dallas is giving all you guys a great deal. And if you go to ddpyoga.com/Austin, you get a great price on DDP Yoga, and you get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. It's available for iPhones and Android, and both versions are getting great reviews. And this app, folks, is money. Dallas has done thought of everything. You can do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. You can access recipes, cooking demonstrations, and nutrition guides, and you can do it all from your phone. He's got a rewards program that's built into the app, too. You get points for the yoga you do, and then you can redeem those points for special rewards and DDP merchandise. Dallas has given you everything you need to get on a path to healthier living, and he's making it as easy as possible. So get the DDP Yoga program at ddpyoga.com/Austin and take advantage of the 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. Like Dallas always says, all you got to do is commit. So make that commitment now. At ddpyoga.com/Austin. Hey, I'm going to let you in on a little secret about TrueCar and the TrueCar app. You can use TrueCar to help you buy a used car. It ain't just for new car purchases. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. And there are over 11,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar lets you get upfront pricing information on new and used vehicles and lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so that you feel confident you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar, via their TrueCar pricing curve, you see what other people paid for the car and you lock in your guaranteed savings. Then you can connect with the local certified dealer of your choosing, take them your TrueCar guaranteed savings certificate, and make your car buying experience quick and easy. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar certified dealer network, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, here we go. Back again with Court Bauer. Court, let's talk about Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman, the advocate, against Dean Ambrose in a street fight match. Mm-hmm. God dang. I was really looking for there were some great moments in this match. But, right. Dean Ambrose, who I love, in there with Brock Lesnar, really never stood a chance. I didn't think he got a chance to employ many of the tools that I suspected he would use. It just seemed just a little too, here's this piece, here's this next piece, a little too formulated and not organic enough. Brock has invented that Suplex City style. There were some legitimate spots in there, false finishes where seemingly Dean Ambrose could get the win. The dirty deeds on the steel chairs was certainly a moment. And, to Brock's credit, when Dean had him in trouble, Jesus Christ, Brock Lesnar will sell like Hamlet. He'll sell for somebody if you get him down. But at the end of the day, this match neither elevated nor hurt either guy. They kind of remained the same. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a weird match because I think it could have been one of those things where a babyface shows his heart, but in the end fails, and he's over because he never quits. He never says die. He doesn't. It's the classic WrestleMania 13 Bret Hart, Steve Austin moment where, man, he's trying so damn hard, but the other guy beats him, and you feel something from him. You're more. He's over in losing more than you would have imagined, and it didn't happen by design here. It was a clunky deal. I mean, they introduce all these weapons in the weeks leading up. Terry Funk kind of puts him over. Cactus Jack puts him over, and then even how they utilized the weapons wasn't that aha moment. It was kind of a throwaway. And I think they could have done more with the environment. I think they could have had more fun with this match. And it was just kind of – it was a win for Brock Lesnar, but it wasn't a memorable win for Brock Lesnar. For Dean Ambrose, there was a time and place when he would have been told how the match is going to lay out, how what the ratio of offense to defense would have been, and how much he was going to get in on offense. And a guy would have given notice or maybe just walked out on the match. But we don't live in that day and age where a guy is going to say, yeah, I'm not going to do that, and walks out on WrestleMania. Maybe 15, 20 years ago that happens. Not today. So he takes his lumps literally and creatively, and that's what the finish is. And I'm not saying Brock shouldn't have gone over, but it's the way they got there creatively and the art of the finish and how you lay out that match. And it just there was a way that Dean could have gotten over and losing, and it didn't happen there. And what's interesting too is Brock Lesnar spoke publicly about it going into WrestleMania in Dallas to the media that he's at his limit on dates. And yes, Vince can cut a lot of checks, but Brock has his limit, and he's at that limit. Now, what does that mean? You can interpret that to mean anything. Have they taken a special traction and not made him so special? And also, as Gary Hart and a lot of others would say back in the day, you got to put a blanket around something like a guy like this. You got to make sure that you're careful with how you utilize him, how you treat him, and make sure he's happy and not overdo it and abuse that. And they might have abused that privilege to now where he's at his limit. And what are you going to do with Brock Lesnar for the rest of the calendar year? And that's not good. You need a guy like that.
Well, again, I thought the match I really thought just Dean Ambrose needed a great performance, and he was going to come out, more over than he was. I mean, the match he had a month ago with Triple H was outstanding. I expected a little bit more out of this match. Like I said, Brock remained the same, still a viable, credible threat to any title because of just he's a legitimate tough guy. Dean Ambrose, the match was it was what it was, and it was nothing more. So I'll leave it at that. I think both guys remain the same. Let's go to the triple threat match. Charlotte against Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks. Obviously, the man Ric Flair was there ringside with Charlotte. I watched this match at the pay-per-view. I only watched a few matches. I was busy doing my thing. At this time, I was in my dressing room drinking Broken Skull IPA with Sheamus. And John Cena stopped by. As I watched this match on the monitor, I loved it. When I watched it back twice on the internet, on the WWE Network, I didn't like it as much because I had to listen to the announcing. And, man, I don't mean that in a bad way because all those guys are friends of mine. But just watching the match from what it was and listening to the crowd, to me, I think this was one of the bright spots of the night, if it wasn't the match of the night. And I love the fact that Charlotte went over. I love the way Ric Flair comes there at the end because Sasha Banks is going to come in and break up the figure eight. She was unable to because of Ric Flair. All the gals look good. Sasha overshot the sunset off the turnbuckle. They all three covered that up. But I thought these women worked their ass off. I like the way that the fact that they call this the women's title now. But I love the match. I loved it without the commentary.
Yeah, the commentary was a little perplexing, and I think Mauro now needs – I thought this would be his moment, his night, where they would bring him up and let him call at least some of the big money matches. And they didn't. Jerry Lawler, who's done a great job with Mauro, I think he's reverted back a little bit to being more of a traditional heel analyst, and I think the dynamics worked pretty good on SmackDown. For some reason, these guys weren't given a call, and I thought the announcing hurt the match, and just some people have an off night, but I think this is the night you could have pulled the trigger on Mauro, and I think he would have lived up to it, and it wouldn't have been a risk at all. But it is what it is. How they assign the broadcast teams is how they assign it, and they have a philosophy behind it. But this is the match I think Mauro would have really taken to a different level.
And going back to the match itself, I mean, these ladies worked their asses off. I thought the match was laid out extremely well. And triple threats are, god dang, you've never worked one, Court. I've only worked a couple. I can't stand them. But at the appropriate times, they would take someone out, and everybody's in on the gig. They know that someone's going to get out, so the two can get the focus and work a little bit of a match. So I thought the match was laid out very well. They executed very well. A little bit of clunkiness in there at times,
right?
But be that as it may, just with the work factor, the fact how each lady would come up with their submission, and Sasha Banks with the what's it called, the bank account, the bank statement,
right.
just the way they would roll into those submission holds. I thought all women had a lot of fire. They all sold their ass off, and on the big stage, I thought they all performed. And again, just watching this without commentary, this was one of my probably my favorite match of the night.
Yeah, and Charlotte did an amazing – I mean, what a natural athlete she is. I mean, we know from her college background, the pedigree of being Rick's daughter. But seeing her hit that high spot, that moonsault.
That moonsault was absolutely incredible.
She's not 5'2", you know? And it's like when you see someone, it's like, wow. Yeah, you are genetically superior when you see that go down. Oh, my God.
But and credit to Becky Lynch and Sasha for Kat for being there, to because you've got to be on the receiving end of that. So, Charlotte with the moonsault, which is spectacular, but big kudos to Becky and Sasha for being there.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm curious to see where they take Sasha moving forward. They're trying to not shine a light on her right now, and I think they're going to come back to her this summer.
Dude, I hope they do something with her, because to me, she's lost some momentum, and she's one of my favorites. And so they need to light her ass back up.
Absolutely. I think they're going to take a detour. They're going to do this Natalya thing for a few weeks. Maybe they bring in Uncle Brett and they do that at Payback. And that would be compelling. Ric Flair on one side, Brett cornering on the other side. And they get through that for a month or two. And then you go to a chase through the summer with Sasha chasing Charlotte, which could be an amazing attraction for SummerSlam in Brooklyn.
Well, a big shout-out to all three ladies. I thought it was a damn good match, and I told them all that. I thought they should have been real proud of themselves, and again, probably the match of the night for me. Let's move on to The Undertaker against Shane McMahon. This was going to be a hard match to have, just because you've got The Undertaker, a guy who's legit 6'10", 290, whatever he weighs.
Right.
We've all seen how big, bad, and devastating The Undertaker is, and against Shane McMahon, who I love to death. Coming out there, and a guy who for a shoot studied Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, throws a little bit of hands with some boxing. I figured they would employ some of these tactics, as both guys are a fan of MMA, and they did. I thought they needed to. It was really hard, though, to – and they worked as hard as they could. And they told – I thought they tried to tell a good story. But, man, when you bring Shane in after as long as he's been gone, as excited as I was to see him, I thought they had the best match they could have, and they worked their ass off. The couple of bumps that Shane took, especially the one off the top, was incredible. But, that's what it was.
Yeah, it was what it was.
What else so can you say? You break it down for me, Court.
I mean, it's just the finish is still perplexing to me, because it looks like Undertaker may be done, and Shane has had a presence more often than not coming out of WrestleMania than he's had going in, almost. So the match at the end really dragged out for me. After that big fall, the match
just
went on
long.
For went long, and I don't know if there was because just everyone was out of gas or whatever. But it dragged. And
yeah,
again,
I don't think
show,
everybody was out of gas. I think it was just the exaggerated selling because of the brutality and the big bump. I mean, you had to drag that out, but it felt long from being on the outside, getting back into the inside. So I can understand why there was so much time there. I thought maybe there was just too much time allotted to the match. I mean, let's do this. Let's get there a little bit quicker. Let Undertaker dominate, toss him around. Boom, put Shane on top, bing, bang, somehow, okay, there's the table, then he goes to the top. So I think if you just shorten that match, mm-hmm. Dare I say 5 to 8 minutes, it's a lot better.
What I think they should, again, booking being hindsight and all that, or hindsight being what it is, I think you could have done this match in about 9 to 10 minutes with a bunch of gimmicks, not in a Hell in a Cell, and done it Vince versus Shane, father versus son, the whole biblical vibe to it, freed up the Undertaker, done something different with him, and you wouldn't have had all the weirdness about Shane versus Undertaker going 25 minutes and the credibility issues of Shane, working over Undertaker. And I think you could have had enough smoke and mirrors to do that match that would have made sense. Because the other weird disconnect you had with this Undertaker-Shane match is you didn't see Vince at ringside, no representation at all, no desperate moves by Vince to stop Shane, not even Vince on monitor watching with the high stakes, biting his nails or throwing the monitor when he gets upset. No representation at all. He's not sitting ringside.
And that's a great point because this was all about gaining control of Monday Night Raw.
Damn right. And it was just there in this, its own little world on this show, and you didn't feel the stakes. And they didn't really call the stakes in terms of calling the action, that the whole complexion of the WWE, this could be the new era if Shane wins this. This could be Undertaker's last ride at WrestleMania in Dallas. It didn't feel as big. It almost is like they kind of muted that energy, and Vince, just one shot would have been enough to represent the stakes being so high. Show him in the skybox. Show him with Jerry Jones. I don't care where you show him. Show the guy and show that the stakes are high. This is his company. This is the legacy. And we didn't get that. It was odd. And also it was odd that then you see Shane kiss his wife. You see his kids watching this very violent match, harkening back to Beyond the Mat with Mick Foley doing that with his kids. I'm like, wow, it is a brutal match. His kids are ringside. We're seeing that perspective, very humanizing, but we're not seeing Vince. And again, it was just bizarre to me.
Yeah, I do. With control of Monday Night Raw on the line, the fact that, he's about as invested as you can be for him not to have any presence in the match, a big mistake. But anyway, respect to both guys. I thought, I think both guys were in between a rock and a hard place and a war of attrition and so many guys hurt. Shane steps up, does a commendable job doing everything that he did. It's just a hard fight to have against a guy like The Undertaker with the street cred and mm-hmm. the business cred that he has. But I thought both guys worked their ass off. Credit to Shane for taking that bump, and good thing that they landed safely, and he's good from it. But anyway, let's move on. Baron Corbin was the last man there at the Tournament Battle Royal for the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy. He eliminated Kane. Baron Corbin, a Royal Rumble is what it is, Court. I don't think we need to sit there and break this down and analyze it. Your thoughts on Baron Corbin? JBL made this statement. He goes, this kid has a huge future in front of him. Words to that effect. And, man, that's almost like putting a jinx on a guy. I just think, you say something a little bit more generic. Hey, man, this is going to open a lot of doors for the kid. Or, mm-hmm. Just don't say by winning the Royal Rumble, this kid has – he's going to be a big star. It's giving him the opportunity to be a big star, but you almost place the onus on the kid's back.
Yes, you do. And, you're trying to – I guess you're trying to make him sound bigger, but when you oversell sometimes, we have a very smart crowd that watches the product. And if you oversell, they're going to push back. And you kind of need to let it be organic. And this was a funky match in general. I don't want to break down kicks and punches because that's all a 20-man battle royal is pretty much. But when you introduce Shaq, an NBA Hall of Famer, a man known around the world – and he's a throwaway in the Battle Royal. They do a spot in there with Big Show, but I'm like, man, why didn't you promote that he was going to be there? I don't care if you cut the deal 24 hours ahead of time. Get them on SportsCenter. Get them doing media that whole morning. Get USA Today, everyone out there. Do a whole media row. Shaq is going to be there. It's a last-minute bonus. You got to subscribe and check this out on the WWE Network. It was just a throwaway. It was like, of all throwaways, the throwaway. They did this. They did this with you, and they did this with Shaq. And I'm like, this is odd. Hell, I would have seen I would have rather seen Big Show versus Shaq. It was just an odd way to utilize that.
Well,
and then again,
go ahead.
Those guys get eliminated, and Baron Corbin wins this, and no introduction. If you don't watch NXT, then who is this guy? It was a perplexing. The whole thing, where it was on the card, everything was just bizarre about this match. It was the bizarro match.
And the thing about it was, I believe, I don't know if Shaq came in late because he had some basketball commitments analyzing or whatever. But, man, just the interaction between him and Big Show. Of course, Big Show's an established veteran, knows his shit. And just, you know, the goozle attempts, you know, and then Shaq, I just, come on, man. You know, you got a bunch of guys in the ring trying to make a name for themselves, trying to hustle, and it just looked kind of clunky. They were able to get both big guys over the top rope, so, you know, you eliminate both guys, but then there goes the intrigue. To your point, man, if you're going to have Shaq, I mean, Shaq, known around the world, he's going to be in a battle role, and you just bring him down, and in 5 minutes, him and Show are out, and then, you know, I expect Show to dominate these things year in, year out, and just win the sumbitch for 5 years in a row. That's because he's the Big Show. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to do nothing with him all year, just he wins the Andre the Giant thing because he's a fucking giant. So you just wasted two big guys, and it was a little clunky, and it was what it was. Good luck to Baron Corbin. We'll see, you know, what happens, how they incorporate him into the main roster, how they push him, or whatever. Let's go to The Rock. He comes out. He's got the flamethrower, and here comes Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, and Eric Rowan. And turns out, you know, after some promos by both guys, The Rock is looking for a match, and he defeats Eric Rowan in 6 seconds. Travesty. This kid gets beat in 6 seconds. Let's go to the Bray Wyatt thing with the promo. I love listening to this guy talk. He doesn't scare me. I don't consider him a menace. He's a guy that I could identify with. I think he's in transition. You make this guy a babyface, I think you're gonna. I think the kid has money written all over him because I love the sound of his voice. I love the drawl. I love the cadence. He's a charismatic dude. And he doesn't got to be the handshaking babyface. But I see big money in the kid as a babyface because I just like him.
Yeah. I think he can make a few minor adjustments and be a big baby face. And there's a soulfulness like Dusty had yes. to his voice. He's relatable in how he looks compared to a lot of people that go to a WWE show and how they dress and how they look. He's very, very relatable. He's one of you. He's one of us, you know. And I thought it was just kind of poetic that on Monday Night Raw last week, they opened the show by paying tribute and honoring his grandfather, Blackjack Mulligan, who passed away, a badass wrestler when there were men in the business, not boys, there was men. And they finished out that show from LA at the Staples Center with Bray Wyatt shining up and being a big baby face and having fire. And it was like, wow, what an interesting bookend to a Monday Night Raw where we might have seen Bray Wyatt, you know, go from the dark side to seeing the light. And I would have loved to have had a more better crafted flip, because I think there's a lot of money in doing an angle where you turn a guy babyface like Dusty Rhodes in Florida in 75, and Gary Hart was being shady with his business, and Dusty went babyface, and then they had this big run with Gary Hart and Pac Song versus Dusty. To have something to fight, a cause to fight when you turn is so monumental, so important, and Bray Wyatt really didn't have that when they did that deal in Raw, but I see the babyface potential in him, and I think you have to be careful because his run as a heel is it was compromised, creatively compromised, not by him, just how they used him. They beat him a lot, and they took away a lot from him. But now you have if you turn him babyface, he has a fresh start. But you don't want to abuse that. You want to make him special because he can count. The crowd reacted to him very powerfully, and I think there's a lot of potential there. But you have to treat him better than you did as a heel.
They gave him way too much mic time as a heel when they found out this new kid is a silver tongued devil and can talk a whole lot and talk great. But here's the thing, man: if you give a guy enough rope, he can hang himself. And so if you're a heel and you're not out there really making a point and saying what you're going to do, just talking. And he has the ability and the gift to be able to do that. And on one hand, that's fine. On the other hand, you know, you become so entertaining, or because you're really not saying anything of merit, or you know, extracting that whatever you're saying on a human being in the ring, your opponent, then it really adds up to nothing. But again, so I thought they gave him enough rope to kill himself off, or they killed him as a heel. And man, in 2016. I just think that the crowd is looking for the next guy that can just talk people into the building. That voice that he has, his presence, his charisma, to me just says babyface. Now, again, I think he can be that everyman type babyface because, you know, he's not the best looking guy in the world. He's not ugly. I mean, he just has a normal body. He's a little bit heavy set. I mean, he is like everyman. So, but with that voice, I see, to your point, so many dusty characteristics or qualities. He's not going to be dusty. No one ever will. But I see big money in the kid. And I got a chance to see Eric Rowan at Monday Night Raw the other day when I went down and interviewed Big Cass and Enzo Amore. And I said, "God damn, kid, what happened?" And he knew exactly what I was talking about. And I shook his hand. I said, "Kid, I said, I feel for you. I said, let me tell you something. You're in a no-win situation. If you had been in a different set of shoes or had some leverage, you know, that might not have happened. But it did. Don't let it bother you. Just move on down the road. And next time you get some airtime on TV, go out there and kick some ass. But I know where you were. I know that you had to do it, and it is what it is, so don't let it get you down." I just had to give the kid that pep talk because I just figure after all the stuff that those guys have been through, you know, whether it's good booking, bad booking, he's a guy on the road, to get beat in 6 seconds, that didn't do him any justice whatsoever.
Yeah, and honestly, I thought that was a moment because John Cena is not cleared yet. He still has some issues lingering. That was a moment to me where it's like, if you're going to do some deal like this, I would have rather seen The Rock or you come out and the other comes out and then you have the Attitude Era versus the New Era. And that to me would have been, you know, three on two and those odds are better than a 6 second win in that capacity. It's just like a black hole in terms of creative, just it goes in and you don't see it, and it just vaporizes the guy.
Well, to me, it happened so fast, and it was like, what did it really accomplish? It didn't do anything for The Rock. It certainly didn't do anything for Eric Rowan. So, you know, what's the deal?
Yeah, I would have put someone like maybe Adam Rose in there for a 6 second, you know, loss or something like that, or someone.
I don't even think the match needed to happen.
No, I agree.
It was not of consequence. You know, you beat the kid in 6 seconds. It was a complete work. And, you know, The Rock came out. He got a big pop. He entertained the crowd. He had the flamethrower. I just didn't think anybody needed to suffer a loss. If anything, build an angle, get some heat on him, and then, you know, bring that back to payback or whatever you said the next thing is coming.
Yeah, or you cut out like 80% of the gaga on the entrance, and you could have done a 5-6 minute match where even if he lost, he could have looked credible in that match somehow, some way. You know, a heel goofs on a you know, slips on a banana peel kind of deal, or they, you know, the heel from the outside screws up interference. Rock gets the Rock Bottom 1-2-3. There could have been a better way to do that.
100% agree. Cut out the gaga. If you want to say we're going to do a match, let's do a match. But hey, don't cheat the people. Give them 5 minutes. Give them 5 minutes of heat, and then wham, Rock goes over. Clean, strong anyway, but give the kid something. I've got to move on to the next match. Let's talk about Roman Reigns and Triple H. Stephanie McMahon delivers about a 3-minute promo. She nails this. It was a little out there, setting the stage, trying to get more heat on Hunter. What was your take on the promo?
Oh, it was your typical WWE WrestleMania big time entrance feel. It was a little Mad Max, I think, is what she was going for. It felt like she was doing the villain from Mad Max Fury Road, but it was a unique entrance. It was fine, but you know, looking at that match, that was a 27 minute match, the second longest match after about a 6 hour show. And I can tell you, I started the show in my living room with my family, my son watching with me. It was just before dinner time. By the time the main event went on, I was in bed watching on my Apple TV, and I was trying to stay awake, and I'm not knocking the match. It's a long show. That's an exhausting show. You think about the length of the Super Bowl. It's not that long. That's a long show, and you're going your last match is the second longest match of the night, only eclipsed by Undertaker Shane, which went 30 minutes and 5 seconds. So That's a long, long piece of business.
Okay, first of all, give me your assessment on the match itself, and let me break down some of the points that I'd like to make on this.
I think you could have cut that match down to half, if not longer. Hey, maybe give some of that time to that Rock-Eric Rowan deal or whatever in the ring, but definitely could have gone about 15. I think it would have been more effective. I think the finish would have had a better, more succinct punctuation on it than going long. I think it lost something, and I think it clearly lost a little bit of the crowd as they left and maybe were streaming on their iPhones the finish, but it felt like you lost some of that energy and momentum you had coming out of the last segment. And I just think you could have done that deal a little bit more shorter period of time. Your show, when you shut a show down around north of 11:30 at night, that's a late night for 6 hours. So I would have gone a little tighter on time. Mechanically, I think it was what it was. It was a by the numbers match. You know, nothing that really is going to probably stand out in all of the 32 WrestleManias. And it's not a match that I felt like a day later had that vibe that, wow, that was a big title switch where we're seeing the new era start here tonight in Dallas. So, it was just kind of there. And I'm not knocking either guy or the match. It was just long. You know,
man, here's the thing. My whole take is exactly what you said. It was way too long. That match should have been 15 minutes. I mean, from bell to bell, 15 minutes. And that being said, all the bells and whistles and action that needed to happen within that 15 minutes. And just this is a deal where, okay, if it's Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and you're out there, hey, give them 30 because they can go 30. But here's a case, and Triple H can go any amount of time you want him to go, but what needed to happen on this, just to make Roman, because if you're going to let Roman go over clean in the middle of the ring, shine him up like $1 million, let him bounce Triple H all over Kingdom Come, finally let Triple H just get a frog's hair of heat on him, and then boom, big finish, bam, 1, 2, 3. Make an impact with that match, make an impact with the finish, and make a statement for the kid. It's about getting this kid over. And at least within the confines of the 20 by 20 being the ring, and then you've got all the other things to deal with, whether it's people resent him or this, that, or they think he's been pushed too hard too soon. That's besides the point. But from a mechanical standpoint with the match, man, if I'd have been in that match, I'd have said, dude, you're going to bounce me all over the place. I'm going to cut you off a couple times by cheating. You're going to come back out on top. We're going to bounce the shit out of me. We'll bring in some bells and whistles. And then bing, bang, boom, wham, big spear, whatever his finish is, 1, 2, 3. And leave on a biggest goddamn high note you can. Because sometimes it'd be a deal where Pat Patterson, who is wonderful with finishes and is a very good friend, you know, he'd come to some of the matches and some of the guys were so over. And he goes, why didn't you just go right into the heat? Or he goes, why did you even get any heat? You didn't need any heat. So, I mean, it's like, you're trying to make Roman Reigns. I don't think you're going to make him in a 28-minute chess match. This match needed to be all about excitement, explosion, and testosterone out of Roman, and that's how I think I should have booked it.
Yeah, it's like a movie. There's some movies where they're a little bit more nuanced, and there's some movies that are like a Michael Bay movie. Bang, boom, explosion, and that's the thrill of that movie. And I think this movie would have been, or this match would have been better in a little bit different, more of a less of a Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair type layout, and more of a just a kick ass, a little bit of a brawl, a lot more action, a little bit of heat, and get to your finish earlier. Because again, you got a long night that's behind you, and Roman Reigns doing long extended matches right now doesn't work to his strengths.
You're showing holes in his game. I mean, I always think that every single crowd has a gas gauge on it, when it's full and when it's empty. And it was damn near empty by the time they got out there just because they've seen so much action. Hey, man, they're here. It's been a blowout weekend. It's been spectacular. You set a new attendance record for WWE. And then, you know, here's the main event. Man, hey, man, here's what we were thinking. But you know what? Let's chop half this shit out and just go 12 to 15 and pop these motherfuckers like crazy and get the fuck out. You got the belt. Let me give you your moment. And, you know, and then the kid, you know, it ends up being what it is. So I thought both guys worked their ass off. Of course, Triple H is one of my favorite workers. Roman Reigns, he's a guy that I love to talk to in person. He's down to earth. He's a cool dude. I wish nothing but the best for him, but just as far as, you know, careers, and if you're Triple H and you're going to make somebody, you know, make him in shorter fashion, because making Roman Reigns work this long exposed more holes in his game than we've already know that exist. Yeah. And so many times he was in sale mode, covered up in all that black, in a corner, clutching his ribs or whatever. And then, you know, it was always, this was the come on match where everybody was using their hands. Come on, come on, come on. And it was just too much. I didn't need to see Roman sell that much. I wanted to see a ball of fire, hurricane, just tornado in action, and then boom, finish. I'd have been happy as a lark.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you look at that match, and you want the crowd to always the crowd wanting more, you know? And after 6 hours, that's a damn hard thing. Going 30 minutes almost with that match, and that's not even including, that was bell to bell, 27 minutes. You talk about the entrances, that match went after, north of 30 minutes, and that's coming off of The Rock doing his surprise return, doing a match. That's coming off of Shaq making a surprise cameo in a Royal or a Battle Royal. That's coming after a Hell in a Cell match. That's coming after a ladder match. So it's like you're facing all that behind you. So you really got to keep that thing tight. And the biggest problem I look at as a takeaway from WrestleMania 32 is the aftermath. What happened at WrestleMania that you felt 24 hours later, or a week later, 2 weeks later? The impact of what transpired at WrestleMania was almost like in its own little universe. And then the next day, it was like none of that mattered. And that to me is the biggest problem with that WrestleMania was there was nothing that resonated. There was no consequences for that WrestleMania. AJ lost and he went on to challenge for the title. Roman Reigns won. And off with a new era started. But what happened to Triple H? There's no story about what happened. He just disappeared. He vanquished Triple H, I guess. There was no aftermath. There's there's no even announcer saying, well, he's in seclusion, and we'll have more on this in a few weeks. Vince comes out the next day. They blow off the Undertaker, Shane Stipp, and Shane's now in charge, and we don't know what happened to Undertaker. Undertaker, I guess, was just a device by Vince McMahon, a blunt object tool that he could use at his disposal. There was no ramifications for Vince using and abusing that privilege with Undertaker. Undertaker didn't get anything on him. That was odd. And it was just like that WrestleMania just stood on its own in its own world, and then we moved on and went in a different direction. So continuity-wise, there was no real connective tissue from Sunday to Monday to the next few weeks. And that's a weird thing, because WrestleMania should feel big. The consequences, the ramifications of what transpires at WrestleMania should matter more than any other event of the year for WWE. It is their big event of the year. And yet, 24 hours later, they had just kind of flushed it down the toilet, which is criminal.
Well, dude, I think you bring up a lot of great points there. And then just on a point you touched upon earlier in the show, if, you know, during the Rock, Bray Wyatt family engagement, you cut out the Gaga, you have a 5-minute match, so it is a match of merit, and they get some extreme heat on the Rock. I mean, they actually cause harm to this guy and put him in jeopardy, and then he hits that finish. Go over clean, be the Rock. But man, to get him in jeopardy, have him sell and have Eric Rowans get a chance to shine as a heel and actually get real heat. And because it would hearken you back to those days where the crowd used to love to chant, Rocky, mm-hmm. Rock. I mean, dude, they would come like crazy because it was an easy, great name to chant. And he was over like Rover, so they always wanted to come for him. So as much time as he likes to take with the mic, you get some heat on him, let that crowd come organically for him, then let him, whether it's out of the blue or with the big comeback, and use the other two, use Bray and use
Braun Strowman.
Yeah, whether you use, you know, those two guys or not, but just make it dynamic, and then the pop that The Rock would have gotten for getting the 1-2-3 count then would have blown away the 6-second record that you set that didn't help anybody.
No, you're right.
And then the crowd would have won on that match, because you would have seen The Rock in action, The Rock in jeopardy, and The Rock in victory.
Who truly came out of WrestleMania with genuine momentum? Of all the matches, do you feel that some came out like, wow, man, they're going to have a hot 2016?
Man, that's a good question.
I can't think of one. I'm looking at the card right now. And here's another thing.
Well, I think the way, again, I think Charlotte came out, you know, her dad, Rick helped her get that win. But I saw all the women come out with momentum just because I thought they kicked ass. And I think it, right now is a great time to be. If you're a fan of women's wrestling, which I am, and if you're one of the gals in the back working, I think now it's a good time to be in the women's division. So out of everybody, I would say that those three ladies came out with momentum. Not necessarily a shit ton of it. That's not what I'm saying. But yeah, at least with something whether, you know, Zack Ryder winning and then losing the thing the next night on Raw. I mean, I thought I love the Zack Ryder win, but then when you squash it the next day, nothing. So what was your points on who came out with Swiss team?
I think that the women's division as a whole probably came out looking the best out of this, intact and looking like they had a positive future coming out of that. And the weird thing is, the Raw after WrestleMania has always been a hot new chapter, kicking off the new season of WWE. And there was such a weird transition because you had no Undertaker, you had no Rock, no Steve Austin, no Shawn Michaels, no Mick Foley, no Paul Heyman, no Brock Lesnar. I'm probably forgetting a few people. No Triple H, no Stephanie. I mean, right there, it's almost a dozen people. No Undertaker, if I didn't mention him, that filled that show, these big, larger-than-life shadows. And they're gone 24 hours later. Not one of them on Monday Night Raw. And then they try to bring in all this new talent, and it's so hard to do that on one show in 3 hours to try to get so many people over, returning acts, new acts. It's very hard. So that was a weird transition to the new season of WWE. And, you know, it's great to have everyone for the big show, but it's like, man, you need to keep at least some of these guys around and cycle them through or cycle them out. Not that night, but like over the course of at least a week or two or a month if you can, because it's such a big gap. And I think it hurts the day in and day out stars to not have these guys seem like perceived peers. They're special big time stars, come out once, twice a year. And then we're back with Roman Reigns and he doesn't have anyone to rub up against. And it hurts. It doesn't create an organic bridge. It hurts those guys. It says to the crowd that, yeah, those are your everyday run-of-the-mill guys, but the big guys, you see them once a year.
Well, that being said, let's wrap this thing up. Court, talk about your podcast once again.
Yes, you can check us all out. MVP, Conan, Jim Cornette, ex-WWE writers, wrestling historians, all of us over at mlwradio.com. We have like 2-3 shows dropping every day. Some are free, some are premium. Go VIP for just $1.99 a month. We have a free app you can get. Go to MLW Radio on iTunes or search in the Google Play Store. It's free. You can stream our free stuff. And then if you're VIP, you can access our premium stuff on the go. We have over 900 shows in the can. All of our archives are available there. That's mlwradio.com. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Court Bauer, and I just recently Instagrammed a picture of your beer. I had it. It's pretty damn good stuff.
It is damn good stuff. And once again, that was Broken Skull IPA I was drinking at WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, Texas. JBL called it a Steve Wise. That chapped my ass. Can please someone plug my goddamn beer? Anyway, I just plugged it, and you can get it at El Segundo Brewing Company if you come to L.A., and if you want to order it on the internet, insidethecellar.com, or if you live in California, Whole Foods or Total Wine. And that's the bottom line because I said so. Court Bauer, thanks for helping me out. Breakdown WrestleMania 32. All in all, I thought it was a pretty decent show. Long-winded. Some matches went too long. Girls came out pretty good. Look forward to seeing what they're going to do with 33, but that's a long ways off. We talked about that before we started rolling. That's going to be a real interesting booking session that they'll undertake in 360 or 350 days. We'll talk about it then.
All right, my man. Thank you so much. And just a quick shout-out. Everyone check out Combate Americas. I expect to produce it. It's going to be on the UFC Fight Pass this coming Monday and then the next few Mondays. You can check it out, UFC Fight Pass, and also on NBC Universo. So check it out.
And as a bottom line, because you said so. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Hey, man, I want to give a big shout-out to Court Bauer. Appreciate you helping me break down WrestleMania 32. I enjoyed the show. I thought it was a little long-winded. A couple of standouts, a couple of things that could have happened. Anyway, that was my thoughts on the show along with Court Bauer. It was what it was, and it was a monstrosity. 101,000 people according to WWE, 97,000 according to other sources. Nonetheless, the biggest WWE gathering in the history of the business. We'll see what WrestleMania 33 brings in about a year.
That being said, hey, folks, Broken Skull Challenge is still kicking ass on CMT. We got preempted last week, but we're back on this Sunday. The baddest athletes in the United States of America coming down to throw down, do business, serious head-to-head competition, and a right to take on my Skull Buster, the toughest obstacle course in the United States of America. All the shirts I'm wearing there, the hats and all that BS, you can find at BrokenSkullRanch.com. You want to order some Broken Skull IPA? Go to BrokenSkullRanch.com. Hey, if you want a Broken Skull Steve Austin knife, go to BrokenSkullRanch.com. You can order that sumbitch there, sharp as a damn razor. Anyway, if you're coming into town, check out Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company in California at Whole Foods Total Wines and InsideTheCellar.com to deliver to your house. Anyway, anything and everything is Steve Austin. You can find it at BrokenSkullRanch.com. Got the website back up and running, everything you need. Hey, quick shout out to everybody. I appreciate y'all supporting the sponsors of the Steve Austin Podcast because, after all, they're the ones that let me do this for you free twice a week. So big thanks to ddpyoga.com/Austin and the DDP Yoga Now app, to 54club.com. Use my promo code Austin to get 50% off your first package, and to TrueCar. And also big thanks to Amazon, who have been supporting this podcast since day one. Folks, just use my Amazon links whenever you're doing any online shopping, and Amazon will kick back a few bucks to the podcast. It does not cost you anything extra. There's no hidden fees or charges. You can buy whatever you're going to plan on buying and help out the podcast in the process. The way you can do this is go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button on the top right corner of the page, then hit the Steve Austin Show button. Amazon links there for USA, UK, and Canada. All my fine sponsors help support the sponsors. That helps support the podcast. I keep opening up two cans of audio whoop ass free each and every single week. Best thing to do is bookmark that sumbitch so you can get to it a lot easier and do what you was going to do. Help out the podcast in the process and do it in one single step. Hey, keep listening. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until next time, my name is Steve motherfucking Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.